This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, I'm Chua Antik. My guest today is Dr. Joyce Mills. She is a US licensed marriage and family therapist, a registered play therapy supervisor, and professor of child psychotherapy and play therapy. Joyce is here with me to discuss how we can improve the behavior of children through expressive methods. Joyce, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I'm delighted.
So I suppose I can start there. What are expressive methods?
Expressive methods are more in the creative realm. In other words, it could be dance, it could be art, drawing, it could be making up stories. Storytelling, of course, is one of the most powerful means of communication with children. It could be with clay, any of the mediums that have to do with not just verbal, but how we express ourselves through the arts, through movement, and joyful ways of expressing feelings that are not necessarily only, you know, hard feelings or struggling feelings, but joyful feelings.
Mm-hmm. And are we not doing this enough at
no,
the moment?
No, we're not doing it enough, is clearly. Children, the language of children is play. Play is the language of children.
Right.
And so we use words. But if you just watch a little child, you know, if you go somewhere and you just watch them play with an empty box, they can make that empty box into anything they want. They're very right brain dominant, okay? Reading language is left brain, okay? But children are right brain dominant. That's how they come into this world.
Right.
So they're always moving, right? Parents say, will you ever sit still? No. And hopefully they're not supposed to sit still because they're supposed to discover. And right now, because of the advanced computer world, I know it's part of our life. I know it's part of the language. However, it really is affecting children because they are not being as creative, and creativity solves problems.
Mm.
We don't solve problems with left brain. We have to go into this expressive world, and then we retrieve it and express it with words. Okay.
Right.
Before children are pre-language, they are expressing themselves. Every parent knows this by watching when they're excited or joyful or when they don't like something.
Mm-hmm.
And they just give you that look, or they fold their arms and they sit on the floor and as if to say, I'm not moving.
you brought up this computer world, the advent of digital technology and gadgets. iPads and some of these apps that are touted to be educational, and are they helpful or harmful? Is there a suitable time when parents should be introducing this gadget to them, or should be withholding their exposure to screens?
Well, I think it depends, okay? I see too many very little children, like preschoolers, too much on a computer. Children need to be eating dirt. Sounds terrible, right? Parents are now screaming at me. But children need to eat dirt because that's how they learn. So when they press an A on a computer, let's say they want them to learn the alphabet, that's very different than drawing an A. It's very different pressing a circle and seeing it and drawing a circle. The brain imprints it differently. The brain does not know the difference between pressing a zero or pressing an R on a computer, but it does know it when you draw it. So even if it's in the sand, if it's in the just kind of on the table, on a piece of paper, little ones, you know, preschoolers, it's really important that they're exercising their brain to get ready for the next level of education.
Mm. And the act of writing, that's left brain?
Writing, let's say writing per se, is a combination. But when you draw it, you know, when you're writing with your hand, you're using a combination much more of right brain and left brain. Okay, so right brain is creative. You know, kids draw out of the line. They shouldn't be given, little children should not be given paper with lines. They should, no, not good for their brain. They should be, you know, when I say little, I mean two to five. It should be, and when I say that, there could be children who master it very easily. But for the long term, you want that brain to be able to solve problems. The left brain, and I'm not trying to be a neuroscientist. I'm talking about child development now. The left brain is linear. Okay? It just sees, it just produces what it sees. The right brain creates all kinds of images. Creates, you know, for example, if I gave you a squiggly line, the left brain would say squiggly line. Mm. Okay. But if I asked you for the, you know, and let's say we kind of covered up and ask you, you know, kind of from the orientation of the right brain, you could say, well, it could be a snake. Oh my goodness. It could be a piece of cloth that is squiggling into a rainbow. Oh my goodness. See, they're not going to say it's a line.
Right.
They're going to create. Mm-hmm. We want that because we want the child's brain to expand so that it gets more information in a good way, not cramming it with memory, because they're not going to understand that, okay? Mm-hmm. So there's a famous child development, and I'll just make it very simple. When we I can think of me driving, okay, when I learned to drive. I wasn't a kid. I was a little older. But when I was learning to drive, I was very tense. I had to get it all right, okay? That means accommodate, like I'm getting to know what to do, okay? Now I don't have to think about it. It's assimilated. It's become part of me. So that part is automatic. Mm-hmm. So we don't have to say turn left, turn right now. I know what to do.
Right. It becomes intuitive.
Intuitive. And we want that intuitive nature because children then will know how to protect themselves. If they don't develop intuitive nature, they will not recognize dangers. Or they may also miss the cues that are joyful and wonderful.
Right. So are expressive methods designed to improve a child's behavior?
They're designed to improve many levels, okay? The behavior is one, because if a child understands choice, okay? For example, they can look at and see a whole range of ways to respond, okay? Then they're going to know intuitively, they're going to know, oh, wait, okay, if I do this, this might not work so well. I could get in trouble, or I am mixing things that are not correct, okay? But if they are doing expressive ways, meeting expressive needs, then they're going to go through a whole range, and they're going to see which is the best choice. So that will affect behavioral choices, okay? Memorizing it does not always do it, so that's linear. Okay, that's linear. Okay, if I cross the street, I'm not supposed to cross the street. But if I understand crossing the street is not just because mommy doesn't want me to, but because it's not safe, so how do we do that? Expressively, we can practice, you know, taking your kids out and looking, saying, oh, look at all the cars. Oh, my. Or playing with a little, you know, miniature cars or miniature boards. They're playing. You're moving it.
Mm-hmm. So when we talk about behavior here, are we talking about how children sometimes are maybe a bit rowdy and naughty and just needs a bit of a discipline? Or is this something that is more clinical or a disorder? Which behavior are we talking about?
Okay. So there are certain behaviors that could be problematic, okay? And I'll talk about that in a minute. I'm kind of outspoken about that because I much prefer a child to be a little naughty than to sit with their hands folded and follow every single direction, because that's not normal. And we want children to be children are curious. If you have a baby, just look at them in the crib and their hands are up over their face and they're turning them and they're curious what their hands are about, you know. This is very healthy. Okay. So now we're talking, put that in a little older child behavior. Of course they need boundaries. They don't understand. We want to keep them safe. So we want to have boundaries. What is safe? What is appropriate? No, I always say parents are, children aren't for hitting. Children are for loving. Hands are for loving. Hands are not for hitting. So there's a lot of techniques that I use about helping children kind of redirect their behavior, channel their behavior, because sometimes children, it's so much energy, they don't know what to do with it. We as adults have to help them express those feelings in an appropriate way. Now, in the same tone, there are children that have extreme, I don't like the word disorders, but yes, I know what you're saying.
What's the right word?
I'm outspoken about it because I think children are labeled too much today. Everybody's ADHD. Everybody's attention deficit. They go to give them medication and so forth. I'm not saying pro or con. I think children are over-medicated, definitely. And if they're not compliant, if they don't listen all the time, there must be something wrong. No, they could be an incredibly creative child. We don't know that. We don't know that. We only know that by watching how they are, doing some school visits. If you have a child and the teacher is questioning, I tell parents, go to the school and get a feeling, because I trust parents a lot. I like parents. Mm-hmm. And no one knows your child better. And also teachers see from a different perspective. But get a feeling. How do you feel in the classroom? Do you feel welcome? Do you see only the best students' work hung up? Or do you see all the children's work acknowledged? Mm-hmm. What do you feel inside for your comfort? Not every child responds to the same teaching methods. But I do think it's important to have boundaries. I do think kids need to know what is appropriate, what is not appropriate. Mm. Okay.
Yeah. So a lot of the onus is on the parents to figure out how the child best learns or express themselves. Imagine that's can be very tough, to put it mildly. How do they know what's beyond? I'm using air quotes here, what's normal and what's mm-hmm. Acceptable.
Well, I think what's acceptable to you as the parent. I don't want to overload parents with thinking they have to be a teacher and a psychologist and an MD and everything, even though they are. I think what's important is, and I do want to say, I have a special needs child, so I understand what that feels like to raise a special needs child, a child with special needs. But I think when it becomes so difficult to go out, when it becomes, you as the parent know, I can't handle this anymore. This is much too much for me. You go and ask for help. And you get some help. You get some guidance. If your child needs an evaluation, you know, the person that you will go to is a professional. And you want them to be, if I can say, a play therapist. Because if they're just going to sit and question the child, they're never going to be able to assess what's really important. And a few sessions would be very, very helpful where you as the parent say, what is the struggle for you? And then the play therapist, you know, can watch with you in the room, depending on the age of the child. Again, it could be a teenager. That the teenager will want to be by themselves. And really guide them. See, what do they do with the toys? What do they do with the time? And you, as a professional, you will know. But I also want to say that even if the professional sees nothing, but the parent feels something, okay, because that could happen. They can say, oh, it's just normal and it's fine. You still, as the parent, need some help and support. You still need some good ideas that you can take home and apply to your child. For example, instead of saying, don't do this and don't do that and I don't like this and, you know, no, you can say very simply, focus in on the things that they do, mm-hmm. not what they don't do. Right. So even if they hand you a glass, you say, oh, thank you for the glass. That's really helpful. Thank you. You want to change the language and change the focus to what they are doing, not what they're not doing.
Right. I see that a lot. Saying, no, don't do this, don't do that. You might injure yourself. Yeah, don't climb too high. Don't.
Those are all suggestions, right. by the way. And so those suggestions kind of could ensure that the child will get hurt. As opposed to, I know you know how to climb, and I know how to for you to be safe. That's right. Hold on to that bar over there. Exactly that way. Very good.
Well, let's take a short break. I'm speaking today to Dr. Joyce Mills. We'll come back and talk about healing and resilience. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Antik. With me in the studio today, Dr. Joyce Mills, clinical psychologist and marriage and family therapist, among other things in her CV. Also, award-winning and best-selling author of many books. We will talk more about that later on. I was looking through your website. I was very struck by how you say it's important for any therapeutic approaches to be culturally sensitive. Can I get you to give an example of what this looks like in action?
First of all, I think that culture and taking care and taking into account the importance of cultural responsibility and cultural sensitivity is critically important because every culture has a different story, so to speak. So, for example, some people that I've worked with in Asian cultures, okay, in Native American cultures, they don't like to give you eye contact. Some children don't like to give you eye contact. Some, and I'm saying I'm not generalizing. I don't want to generalize, but it's for that particular culture, it may not be culturally respectful. We cannot judge that and say, well, they're avoiding contact. That's no. We need to understand who this culture is, and the family is a culture. The family itself is a culture. Okay? Mm-hmm. So how they celebrate holidays, what's important to them, their favorite foods, is grandma, grandpa living with them? How do they see the stories of their life. This is really important because there's so many beautiful stories, you know, how grandma bakes bread or, you know, how grandpa makes fires or, you know, how things are made is really important. It gives the heart of the culture. It's also the heart of the family. Mm-hmm. So within a family, there could be a very modern family, but their family is not. It's a very traditional family. How do they get along and how do they work together? But I always think of a tree. The roots of a tree is really important to attend to. It's not just the flowers. So right now the children are the flowers and the fruit and so forth. But the roots give substance to the trunk and to the rest of the tree. And I think in all cultures, that's critical. And in many, many therapies, it's not attended to. They're only attending to the behavior. They're only attending to the presenting problem. Okay. But the presenting problem has roots. And it doesn't mean pathological. It doesn't mean like ill. It means strength. Where are the roots of strength? Right. Because that's where the healing is.
Okay. So issues arise when people have misunderstanding? Is it mm-hmm. different ways of expressing love or compassion
yes.
or caring?
Yes. Yeah. Some cultures that I've been learning about, you know, they don't express physically. They don't go and run and hug people right. and, you know, it's much. But that has nothing to do with how much they love their child or their family. Mm-hmm. And it must be respected. So when it is judged by an outside person as maybe the father is cold, the mother is not comforting, that's a very bad analysis because we have to know where is that coming from. Mm-hmm. Where is that? Just like there could be cultures where everybody's hugging and kissing all the time and, you know, showing very demonstrative. So some people, somebody not understanding the culture could say, oh, that's an overprotective mother and they're trying to smother their child. No, that's the way they show love.
Right, right. But are there not things that are universal across cultures, for example, sitting around the table and talking and catching up over dinner, or not looking at your phones when you're in the presence of your loved ones, or when you're in the middle of a conversation? Are there not things that are true or constant and are accepted as a root, you know, in, mm-hmm. in wherever you are?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a very good point. I'm older, you know, so I don't like to see people sitting around with the phone. When I'm with friends and so forth, I ask them to please put the phones away while we're having dinner together or we're joking around. Because, and especially at dinner time, holiday times, there's no phones. And for that little bit of time, life will go on. I think it is rude because you're having invisible people at your table, which keeps you from making a relationship with the people that you're with, mm-hmm. even if you don't agree.
Yeah.
Even it's okay not to agree.
You set your own terms.
Yeah, and I think every family has to set their own rules with that. I don't know what this generation will do. I'm in another generation. But I'm hoping that this generation understands that what they're doing is not helping their family come together or their community of family come together, but they're not building the strength of the relationship, no matter what culture they're in.
So you use the word healing to describe some of the work you do. What do you mean by healing in this context?
Healing is deeper. Okay. There's conscious ways. For example, if I tell you what to do, okay, that would be fixing. I'm fixing. Okay. I'm fixing a problem. Healing is it becomes automatic. Okay. And so when I do my workshops, I say you could either be a mechanic and learn all these techniques, or you can be a healer and reach the person's heart. Mm-hmm. And for me, I always ask myself, if I have 1 hour with a child and I will never see them again, what do I want to leave him with?
Right.
I think of that before I would see a client. I like to train people to say that. And I also like to say, with our little time together, what is it that you hope for? So now the hope is in the person. They may not have even thought, what do I hope for? But I've already said, with our time together, so that frames how much time we have. And then it puts it, they're important. What do they hope for? That could be completely different than what a teacher tells me they want to have happen.
Mm.
But the artistry is to bring them together in a good way.
Yeah. And tell me if I'm wrong. So you're trying to get them to provide the solution rather than you telling them how to fix the problems.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah. Because how many people stop smoking because they know it could kill them? Very few.
I think many people know that it kills them, but they don't stop.
Exactly. Right? So that's what I mean. But until it becomes something that awakens inside of them that says, is this good for me? I don't know. Today I need to stop. That's it. It's from inside. And what we want to do is stimulate that kind of a feeling, that kind of, determination. And what I like to do, very important in changing behavior, is never focusing on the negative behavior, but what you're talking for healing is find out what the child likes to do.
Mm.
What do they like to do? For example, I lived in Hawaii for 9 years, and I worked in a residential teen center. And so I would get a stack of paper with all the problems of the child, a teenager. And I remember saying, you know, I haven't, when I met the child, I said, you know, I haven't even read any of this. But what I want to know is, what do you like to do? And so this one boy, for example, he said, well, he likes to surf and he wishes he was back on his island so he could surf. You know, he's kind of a tough kid. And I said, oh, so, hey, tell me about your board. What kind of board do you have? Mm-hmm. And all I did is talk about surfing for a very long time. How do you read the waves? How do you know which board to use? You know, all the things that surfers. And I said, you know, I'm not a surfer. I love the water. But it sounds like you know a lot about surfing. So I said, what happens when you wipe out? Mm-hmm. There's a big wave. And he says, hey, you get back up and you paddle out again. Yeah, I said, you do, don't you? Right. And I said, so how about if we surf together here? So whatever feels like a big wave, you can paddle out again.
Mm. So that's a metaphor. You're
it's
using
a
metaphor.
All metaphor.
Right.
Metaphor is the most powerful means of communication transculturally. Mm. Transculturally. Because you will remember a rainbow. But how many remember a chart and a graph? Right? So if I say, would you like life to feel like a rainbow? Would you like to just wake up one day and feel like the moisture in the air?
Yeah. But, you know, metaphors can be read in many different ways. The wave can be seen as, you know, arbitrary, random,
yes.
unfair, you know, mm-hmm. on a good day, mm-hmm. but the water is unkind. How do you make sure that these stories or metaphors impart the right lessons?
Because I'm finding out what's important to the person. In other words, you want to know what does your child, what do you like to do? If they didn't like the ocean or they had a very bad experience, of course I wouldn't use that. I would want to know what they like to do. And I don't care what they would tell me. The technique is about, or the approach is about utilization. You use what's being given to you. So in the first session, I want to know, what makes your heart happy? Mm. I know you've got all this stuff here, but what makes your heart happy?
Not many people can answer that, though.
Hmm?
Not many people think about what
no.
makes them happy.
No,
it?
You don't. When you are so buried in problems, and I'm not minimizing them because I've worked with very serious issues. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons I come back here is because I've worked with hurricanes and earthquakes and explosions. And I use my methods, the methods of creativity and the inner strengths, the resilience of the community. Not just the problem, but looking at the enormous resilience people have, and instead of only focusing on the trauma, I focus on the resilience to heal the trauma. Okay? Healing is different than fixing, right? It's different. If I give you food, I give you water, I give you, that doesn't mean that you're okay. It means that on a material level, we're taking care of you. Mm-hmm. But think about, what if I give you the food and I say something like, I know this rice is very important to you, and I went and found enough rice for your community. So I'm giving it to you, and I'm with lots of love and care, and I know that it will nourish you in a good way. Okay, that's different than, here's a bag of rice.
Mm.
So this is what I've been what I looked at, is culturally, what is it that nourishes a community after
yeah.
a tragedy? And that could be for a family or obviously now a whole community.
Yeah. The kid that you work with was a tough kid, right? Some kids are built tougher than others, rather they bounce back faster than others. Are they just made that way? It's just genetic variation? Some kids are more resilient than others?
You know, I don't like to measure resiliency. I guess that's I wish somebody would, because I'm not a scientist in that way. But I do find that when you as a therapist or you as a teacher or whomever is there, when you focus on the strengths you're going to see resilience. It's going to be in one way or another. But it's really important that, for example, one child could hear one metaphor of what they did and just, wow, this changed me. Okay. Another child might not get it right away. And that doesn't mean it's not there. There's seeds, and resiliency is like seeds. We nurture them. There's a wonderful Hawaiian story. It comes from an old grandma from the islands of Molokai. She has now passed. It was in the 1800s, and I have permission to share the story. But it's called The Perfect Bowl of Light. And she said, every child is born with a perfect bowl of light. And with this bowl of light, the child could swim with the fishes and ride on the backs of sharks and fly with the birds and be okay. But in life, she says, there are negativities. There are hurts and pains and jealousies. And these hurts and pains become like stones, and they get placed in the bowl. And pretty soon, there could be so many stones, you cannot see the light. Mm. And pretty soon, the child could become like the stone, stubborn. They say humbug, you know. But what this grandmother says that's so wonderful is all the child needs to learn to do is turn the bowl upside down and empty the stones, because the light is always there. Nothing can take this light away. Right. So I have kids make bowls of light. We've made thousands of bowls of light in my trainings. And then they go and they describe, okay, what they go and get stones. Okay. And those stones could be in the form of a leaf. It doesn't have to be a literal. It could also be used in your imagination. You could, you know, like a meditation, and then turn the bowl over and empty the stones. But sometimes to identify what are those stones, criticism, self-worth, drugs. Kids have told me drugs, abuse, alcohol, you know, all different things, family struggles. But they are the light, and nothing can take that light away. It's just the stones. So that's our work in healing, is to restoring that light, the image of the light, the connection to the light that they were all born with.
Joyce, at the time of recording, we are recording this on October 5th, you'll be conducting a series of workshops this weekend, and I suppose by the time this is broadcasted, it will be too late for listeners to go to those workshops. But where could they, you know, find you, or if they want to learn more about you, where can they go to get these resources?
Well, my website is storyplayglobal.com, all one word, mm-hmm. storyplayglobal.com. Mm-hmm. And email is drjoyce@drjoycemills.com. And I'm happy to help in any way. I have some books on there, and some are for children with serious medical problems, another for children about dying, you know, but they're all metaphors. And, you know, I'm just actually in just going to be translated in Indonesian is reconnecting to the magic of life. Mm. And that story came because I did live through a very big hurricane, a Category 5 hurricane, right, in Hawaii.
I see. When was this?
This was in 1992. Okay. And what I learned from that is that all of us live through hurricanes in one form or another. But how we become the thriver of our personal storms are important. And that hurricane transformed my work, because instead of from only individual play therapy and psychotherapy, it became very community-based, so that you could, so like if you took a pebble and you threw it in a lake and it ripples, that's kind of what we want to look at. That's how we change behavior. That's how we change our communication with one another, and that we learn to love one another. Most important word is love and kindness and compassion. Mm-hmm. If our kids learn that, the computer pales in comparison. They need to learn how to show love and compassion to the child sitting next to him or her. That would be the gift of our world.
In light of what happened in Indonesia, I understand you'll be speaking in that country as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you for speaking to me today.
It's been a real joy to meet you, and I hope in some way anything that I've said could help someone, because I know I'm helped just by sitting here and listening to you.
The privilege is ours. Thank you again. You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.